right, I admit it. I'm kind of dead.
You have to keep up the fight, Sam. It's only been 366 days of a Trump administration. You can't be dead yet.
Oh. Do you know that? Do you know that number because of the march yesterday?
Because of the march. Most of the marches were happening yesterday. There's a few in different cities that were happening today.
All right.
And also because Trump almost nearly perhaps made it an entire year without shutting down his government.
Yeah. I had money on it going a year. I refuse to say how long I think the first administration will go. I think the only thing I'm on the record is saying is that if he goes 4 years, I think he gets eight. With the caveat that I'm not sure that he's going to go 4 years, not with the way things are going.
I found out an interesting tidbit that he and Jimmy Carter have the only distinctions of being the president in the White House with their party controlling the Congress and still having a government shutdown.
Yeah, so we have a government shutdown right now. And what that means is nothing connected to the government basically works. Can we mention you? Is that a...
Sure.
Okay, yeah.
Many times before.
Sure. Yeah, you're... Okay, I forget, and no. I'm tired, and I can't hear.
I am a government employee.
Yeah, you're a government employee, and so Monday, what happens to you?
I'm honestly not sure. We could have a soft shutdown or a hard shutdown.
Okay.
Which isn't nearly as fun as it sounds. A soft shutdown is where we report to work and we go in and we sit at our desk and twiddle our thumbs or clean our desks.
Right.
A hard shutdown is where we go into work on Monday again and get a letter handed to us and then we go home and twiddle our fingers.
So I'm not quite sure. Everybody's blaming everybody else for the shutdown.
Yeah.
So far, is this a what does reality say on this, or does reality in fact, is the evidence in fact clear?
Well, I'm looking at from a perspective of it's no stranger. It shouldn't be any strange news to our listeners that I tend to side with Democrats who are in favor of legalizing a way for young people who arrived here as children to be able to stay here and be able to go to school and get work authorization. So there's a lot of us who are advocating for a solution to Trump just pulling DACA. That's deferred action for childhood arrivals.
Right.
And there are some Democrats that will refuse to negotiate on a budget until both CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Plan, and DACA are resolved, because both of those things are things that, well, from a lot of people's perspectives, Trump has royally messed up on.
Yeah, and those are both programs in that they take care of children and then they are about children, seem to have a much wider support than other similar programs that include adults.
That probably is true. I mean, even Fox News polls have seen overwhelming numbers supporting some way for young childhood arrivals to the country to be able to get some legalized status.
Right.
You're going to have people that are going to play party politics where you're going to have Republicans say this is, Chuck and Nancy's fault. And, and then those of us that say, well, Your party controls, for various definitions of control, the White House, and you have the largest number of people in Congress and Senate, right? You have the majority in Congress and Senate.
Right.
You can't be blaming this on the people that, don't have control.
On the other hand, when the Democrats were in control of the legislature, very often the Republicans would use a government shutdown as a stick.
Yeah.
Against the legislature. And from my own perspective, I don't know that was ever a strategy that ever worked particularly well for the Republicans. It always seemed to, the one time, I think the first government shutdown ploy, I think, ended the Contract for America. If my memory serves, and given how I'm feeling right now, it may not.
That's one from about 4 years ago.
We're talking the 90s,
yeah.
The late 90s.
Oh, goodness.
This is under Clinton.
Under Clinton, and the government shutdown, I think, is part of what ended the first ascendancy of Newt Gingrich, the politician who I most believe could be turned. Come on,
just because he likes space, Sam.
I think he smokes a lot of pot. But anyway, That's besides the point. Now that the Democrats are giving this a shot, it seems to me, from my perspective, that this seems to be mostly a Democratic led ploy. It didn't work. I don't know why they're doing this.
It's definitely Democrat led, but there's enough Republicans to actually make this function.
Yeah, so. to go back to what I said before is that this program has a lot wider support than you might assume, because it deals with children. I guess there's some health in the fact that this government is willing to protect children, or at least parts of this government is willing to protect children from other parts of this government.
Or at least temporarily shut down vital parts in order to say protecting children is of utmost importance.
But that's just a long way of saying what I just said, in a way.
Fair.
But so that's where we are. And it's like, okay, I get why they're trying to, what they're going for here. And I clearly see what the goals are. I just don't know how effective they're going to be, given the track record of this ploy, is my ultimate point. You know, I'm not saying bad job Democrats. I'm just saying, do you think this is going to work? And I suspect the answer might be no, but it's basically what we've got, which is kind of a crappy and desperate place to be.
Well, there doesn't seem to be much that's working very well at this time. You have parties that are really splintered. And like I said, for various definitions of control, do the Republicans govern, both legislative branch, both houses of the legislative branch and the presidency?
Right. Yeah, I'm actually reading that Wolf book right now, Fire and Fury.
Oh, boy.
Or in this case, listening to it, because it was gifted to me as an audiobook.
Nice.
And, I don't think anybody's in control of anything right now, if the book is to be believed. But the weirdest thing about this book is I was expecting to hear things that I didn't assume. And this book is kind of just kind of confirming to me what I thought the White House under Trump would look like, is that he seems to like to work in a chaotic environment and to have several fronts within his organization fighting with each other.
Oh yeah, he loves being the center.
But he's also mostly an empty box too. He generally just tends to repeat what the code that he's loaded with. He's a bit Arduino in that respect. But anyway, we've got some announcements. First and foremost, January is the month that we're in. In 2 months' time, at the end of March, March 31st, will be our 400th episode celebration at 733 Arts here in Tacoma, which is on Pacific Avenue. Guess what 733 stands for in this case?
Is it the address, Sam?
It might be the address, 733 Pacific. And we'll be having a bit of a party. We're still finalizing what will be happening there. We'll definitely be doing the live recording of the show, but we will also be having musical acts. Like I said, we're still kind of nailing that down right now, but stick here for more information. And once again, March 31st, 400th episode. I'd like to turn it into a party.
We'd welcome out of towners.
Oh, yeah.
You know, listeners from afar, longtime listeners, recent listeners who have just joined us or discovered us.
Sure. And then in our segment 2 weeks ago with Mandisa Thomas, founder of Black Nonbelievers, Mandisa mentioned that just days before our interview, an intake specialist at her local AR refused to indicate that Mandisa was an atheist, saying, "You gotta believe in something." Becky has an update from Mandisa. Would you like to read that for us?
Yeah, sure. Mandisa said that she received a call from the department manager of the registration department at Piedmont Fayette Hospital, and they spoke for a decent length of time. She extended her apologies and told Mandisa that the employee had been approached about the incident and was given coaching and additional training on how to handle situations like this better. She also asked for suggestions on what the hospital could do to be more inclusive to atheists. At the time that Mandisa wrote this, she had already given her suggestions. The conversation was very productive, and she also gave the intake specialist the Black Nonbelievers website in case they wanted more information. And of course, Mandisa admits it could be lip service at the end of the day, but we guess we'll see. Mandisa says, "I'm still a human being and I feel just like everyone else, and it would be nice to never have to experience something like this again. But in the meantime, I'll keep doing my best to speak up and keep providing that foundational support that we know is needed."
Yeah. I literally, the one time that I've been admitted to a hospital, I was in a fair amount of pain. And I mean, at that point, they were finally giving the IV drugs and the pain was finally subsiding. But it was after several days of uninterrupted agony. And if I got asked a question like that in that moment, if I got told something like that in that moment, I don't know that I would have handled it as well as Mandisa did. I'll just say that.
So your health is in danger, possibly some of your, you know, vital functions involving your five senses.
I'm a crabby jerk. I just spent several days in pain. My health being in danger is secondary to the fact that I just feel awful and might take that as an opportunity to express my rage at someone.
So somebody comes in, asks you, so do you need a young priest and an old priest?
Okay, Becky might need that one explained.
That is from The Exorcist. That's all I'll say.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, I'm glad that as atheists, we neither do we believe in God nor the need of priests for exorcism.
Yeah. So
we rely on antibiotics for that.
So well done to Mandisa there. And I'm really glad that we had her back on the show. She was one of the first people I think we ever really interviewed in our adventures in radio back when we were on KLAY. And I'm friends with her on Facebook, and I watch Black Non-Believers with much interest.
Yeah, as we've grown as a show, so has Black Non-Believers. It's just really impressive to see how many different chapters there are and affiliates there are around the country. And I'm excited for the one popping up in the Pacific Northwest in Portland. And we'll be hoping to hear about all the kinds of activities going on there. Maybe someone wants to start one a little bit closer to home, like in Tacoma or Seattle.
I'm just back to that you gotta believe in something on intake. That would I'd be throwing furniture. I mean, that's enraging.
So what's your religious preference, Mr. Mulvey?
Yeah, well, they
atheist.
They actually asked me that because I was admitted at St. Joe's, which is right across the street from here, and
the saint in the name gives.
Yeah, it's clearly a commercial non-religious hospital. But no, it's a Catholic hospital, and they actually asked me, did I want pastoral services, and I said explicitly not. And
they seem to be cool about it.
The
right?
intake person just sort of said, smile and said, "Yeah, yes, sir."
Like, awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the best possible reaction.
Yeah.
I think it is relevant if someone is receiving medical care and looking at possibly going into hospital to be admitted to know what someone's religious preferences and backgrounds are, because it can help provide comfort.
This is interface between medical services and humanity. I mean, and people go into hospitals sometimes for run-of-the-mill stuff, but sometimes for life-threatening stuff. And at that point, like, we didn't know how bad my situation was. So I think it's fair to ask that question. I just believe that, and as happened to me, I think the question asked should be accepted for what it is, regardless what the answer is.
So, valid question to ask. Also, hello, hospitals, please accept any of the answers as valid.
Right. Absolutely.
So, I really do like, though, that that she did get this kind of response back. And although Mandisa did say, you know, she's already given her suggestions, we'd love to hear from listeners who say, hey, what could hospitals do to be more inclusive or friendly to atheists? I think that would be a really important kind of thing. Because while some people get pastoral care because they're Catholic and they get a priest to come visit them, or, you know, a rabbi or a layperson from your synagogue can come and visit and do your specific blessings.
Yeah.
What do atheists get? And what kind of pastoral care can be given? What kind of humanizing care and affirming kind of care and words can be given to you if you're in the hospital and you're an atheist?
Actually, if we could get stories about hospital stays when you're an atheist, that would be a very interesting episode to me.
So email questions at atheist.radio or give us a voicemail, right?
Yeah, voicemail would work great. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. In my case, it was the crucifix you couldn't take down.
I would just want like an extra side of dessert or something, but...
What's that?
Like an extra dessert in my dinner.
Chocolate pudding and the cheesecake.
Yeah.
Is there a religious reason why you should have the chocolate pudding and the cheesecake?
I'm going to tell them yes.
Okay. No, I mean, when we were there, they were absolutely nice to us about the fact that I was a very public atheist. Mm. And We specifically gave them instructions to let the pastoral services know that, so they don't just happen to stop by while my huge numbers of atheist friends are in the room. And this is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about, well, more religious freedom, I guess, in the good and bad senses, and also update to last week's episode about blockchains.
Has Ngarwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngarwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an Ngarwe Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Wes is angry because I didn't introduce him.
I'm crying. There are tears.
Yeah. Except Wes needs no introduction.
Aww.
Nor does Becky.
Nah, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, you're often in this chair these days.
I am.
Again, this is Ask an Atheist, and yeah, the reason why I'm forgetting how to do these things is because we went and saw, we went to a show last night. Well, at least Wes and I went to a show. Becky decided to have a quiet night at home, which is why Wes and I are beat and sound like somebody has run gravel through my esophagus, or my windpipe in this case. And Becky sounds all chipper and happy and is good to go.
It was an amazing show.
Yeah, it was a really good show. Bess is a local, I guess, prog band would not be too far a stretch.
Then you had two other bands that were having like reunion shows, and they were amazing.
Yeah.
Who's this? Mighty High in the Approach? Local talent?
Yes, but I want to talk about Bess, damn it.
Okay.
Partly because it's always been a conundrum to explain, like here in the show, you know, in the community around the show, music gets talked a lot about, but I clearly like music, but I don't talk about it very much because my music is not.
Your tastes are not the tastes of others.
Right. And now I've got something I can point to and say, nah, pretty much that. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm into. And but also because
if that's the case, then I like the thing that you do.
Well, that's, yeah. It gets weirder, though. I mean, you know. And the cool thing about Bess is that its bassist is none other than Nick Kennedy.
Friend
and alumnus of the show. I had a great time last night. So, blockchains, yeah. Brian of Chicago sent us a photo of a banana coin info table display he saw on social media. Some investigation revealed that banana coin presents itself as the first environmentally friendly plantation in Laos, which has released a utility token based on Ethereum pegged to the export price of 1 kilo of bananas. Banana coin, whose team is comprised of Russian entrepreneurs and Laotian agricultural experts, grows organic bananas of the ladyfinger cultivar for export to China. The whole endeavor actually appears to accept cryptocurrency transfers as crowdfunding investment capital rather than unlock its own coins through a blockchain.
Wow.
What do you make a banana coin, Sam?
All right, Becky has been pointedly looking at me ever since this story came up because she really, really, really wants to make the deadly obvious joke about banana coin.
It's just ringing in my ears.
Okay,
you know,
this.
I was going to let you do it, but for that pun, no.
Okay.
Denied.
All right. So, but the banana coin things, I looked at it and I said, banana coin, you know, is it a joke because you say everything's gone bonkers or bananas or, you know, this is just crazy? It seems to be a real farm growing organic bananas. But they seem to be much like Ask a Blockchain or like Long Island Blockchain Company, T-ICES.
Right, yeah.
Or something.
Long Blockchain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
which is how I'm ordering my Long Island iced teas, a drink I never get in the future. I'll just ask for a Long Blockchain, which means I think I get Sprite and a lot of liquor that the bartender doesn't understand.
And a dash of cherry juice.
So it does seem to me like this is an agribusiness that's trying to literally cash in, not even Ethereum in on something, but cash in on.
Well, no, other cryptocurrency in. So I'll take a page from Josh here and say fake cash in.
Fake cash in.
Yeah.
No, they do accept investments, crowdfunded investments via Ethereum or Bitcoin.
Okay, so Lady Fingers, are those the banana now? Because I know...
The wee bananas.
Oh, the tiny bananas. Okay.
The cute ones.
Yeah, because I know there's a drastic lack of biodiversity in banana crops. Like you have the Cavendish bananas.
The Cavendish bananas are the ones that have the really thick skin that are marketed all throughout the United States.
Okay.
Those are the popular ones. They hold up really well and they don't bruise very well.
And they replaced some other banana.
That's now extinct.
That's now extinct because it got a horrible disease. But according to you and literally no one else, Becky, that's why banana candy doesn't taste like bananas.
It is the banana candy flavor.
Did you see how just like I pressed a button and it's like, hey!
It's very exciting to me because I'm one of the only humans that really enjoys banana flavored candy. And everyone says banana flavored candy isn't actually flavored like bananas. It's just painted yellow, and so we tell ourselves that it's banana.
Yeah.
But no, it comes from a compound that's synthesized from the one of the old extinct cultivars of bananas that. Is not that flavor isn't really it doesn't come out so much in the Cavendish bananas that we have, you know, in school lunches and things like that.
Right.
I think Dan would back me up on this, and he may have even said this in a For Science segment at some point. But the banana flavoring is a synthesized compound that mirrors an extinct flavor of an extinct cultivar of bananas. So, and Ladyfingers are sweeter than Cavendish and highly prized in China right now.
Okay, well, citation needed.
So you're saying these Ladyfinger candies or Ladyfinger bananas would be closer in flavor to the banana candies? Then,
I don't know. I've always
thought the banana candies to be way sweeter than standard bananas.
I'm actually curious because I do like a banana.
I like a banana. I generally hate banana candies and loathe banana chips.
I love the banana chips. I like plantains. I like Cavendish. I like any of the
bananas. This always makes me feel weird because the next thing I want to say is this is Becky. She is 5. But then I have to reconcile the fact that I'm married to Becky.
No, I just in
you
my,
like kindergarten food.
I do. I like kindergarten food. I'll eat ants on a log for dinner all day.
Dinner if it's all day.
It is when it's ants on a log. No, I do like the kindergarten foods. I'll eat goldfish crackers. I like interesting
what is this
foods
ants
also.
Ants on a log.
Ants
you don't
on
know
log?
What ants on a log is?
No.
You were deprived.
I envy you. I envy your ignorance. Becky, please take this valued attribute of Wes away from him.
Okay. I shall...
Go ahead. Ruin my childhood.
I shall ruin your adulthood at this point. ants on a log is when you take celery slices and then you put peanut butter in the little cavern on the inside of the celery.
I do that.
And then you line up your little raisins like they're little ants climbing on the log. And if you want if you want ants on a snowy log, you do it with cream cheese.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I stop at the peanut butter. I love the celery and peanut butter. After that, blasphemy.
Oh, raisins. Raisins make everything better.
One, I hate the name because I don't want to eat ants. Yeah. I'm not an insectivore. And two, I just don't like raisins that much.
You
which
don't.
which might be is a cause of concern in our relationship, the fact that I don't like raisins.
Yes, if that's the biggest cause of concern that atheists have in their relationships, then yeah.
So I suppose we might want to return to blockchain at some point, and the blockchaininess of this.
You know what also makes a chain? Little raisins lined up on ant. Okay, blockchain. We'll get back to it. Go.
Go on.
That's all.
Okay.
You have to line them up in a
little
chain.
So you weren't so much realizing the mistake you made and handing it back to me in as much as you were done but wanted credit for realizing a mistake and handing it back to me.
Something like that.
Okay.
It does all come back to reasons.
Just as long as we understand where we are here. No, all right. So the whole concept behind Banana Coin is apparently there's this Laotian agricultural folks who are trying to make bananas of a different cultivar in a environmentally friendly way, and are finding alternative methods to raise capital for it. So the way they're doing it is by going into cryptocurrency, one of the least environmentally friendly computing and funding methods possibly available.
But these little ladyfinger bananas are also extremely popular in China.
Oh, so, are they? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So they are actually filling a void that's needed in China, so they can get funding, I would assume.
Well, people like bananas. I'm not saying there isn't a market there. I'm just saying that they're selling themselves as ecologically friendly, and then turning to an ecologically unfriendly method in order to achieve funding, which is the Ethereum protocol currencies. I guess the question then becomes, when you do that subtraction of the benefits of this farming technique, like, you know, how does it end up looking? Is this a net gain or a net loss in whatever ineffable ecologically friendly metrics we choose to use?
I just have a feeling that the people that are running the project will be able to profit doubly, both on the Bitcoin front and also the money that they will get from selling these products to other countries.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool looking for new ways to fund this kind of agriculture. I think it's cool.
I just hope that the people that are actually doing the work in the fields are getting better paid.
Are seeing the results of that.
It does say eco-friendly and organic, but it does not say fair trade.
Yeah.
They specifically set up shop in Laos because they say Vietnam is also a big cultivator of bananas and this specific banana, but we want to isolate our crops from the contaminated soils of Vietnam due to lots of chemical warfare that has happened there. So there's some vague references to those things, but we don't know how.
Oh, this might be environmentally friendly, like praying to crystals is environmentally friendly.
They say that they don't use any pesticides.
Okay.
Which is hard to believe, because even organic farming uses lots of different materials that are just classified as organic. At this point, it is really just in the planning stages. So they're setting up their farm and everything, but...
Okay, so this may either be a questionable way to fund a good project, or something that's just kind of crap all the way through and is more marketing than it is anything else.
I think it happens to be marketing and trying to get crowdfunding by linking it to something called blockchain. And so I think that they're trying to hit it from many different angles. You're looking at it from the folks that want to invest because they think that organic is the thing that will cure the world of all of its ills. And they're looking for people that are gullible enough to click on something just because it says blockchain and it has coin in its name. And even maybe some not so scrupulous entrepreneurs who want to do businesses outside of
maybe
United States interests.
Maybe Xenocoin should be intentionally insecure. we make it intentionally insecure, like we use, you know, single des or something like that. And we market ourselves as the ecologically sane cryptocurrency.
Well, in terms of giving the appearance of security, at least, when you click on the Bitcoin website, it has a little thing that comes up, like a splash page almost, that's like, we're checking your browser to make sure that everything's secure
just,
and kosher.
I saw that. That's just Cloudflare. That's a standard. Yeah. A lot of websites that do questionable or things that are likely to be DDoSed.
So saying, we're checking to make sure you're not attacking us.
We'll use Cloudflare most of the time transparently. You don't often see the redirect like that.
Yeah, that's one of the more horrible versions of it.
When I
5 second countdown.
When I see that 5 second countdown, I do not think secure. I think something questionable is happening.
Right. But it's supposed to advertise, giving the impression that we're super secure and awesome. To gullible people that will just click on something because it says coin.
All right.
Or it says blockchain.
Because that's, like, I get that, but it doesn't say that to me at all.
To,
I guess
to
non IT, it says quite
people,
the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. It says security.
So I don't know how many more weird coins and weird chains things can come up with. And I'm not sure how long this is going to continue and be in, you know, sort of like popular purview.
This is the Florida land grab. This is the. You know, dot com boom. This is the real estate coin boom. Yeah, basically. and in this model of economics, there it appears to be a boom followed by a bust, with a small percentage of the things that grew big in the boom persisting in post bust era.
I just can't wait for the day that video card prices go back to quote reasonable prices.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. One, video card prices were never reasonable. Two, it's going to get worse because there's a huge interest in video cards right now doing hashes.
Some of these cards are going up to like
using CUDA and whatever APIs the video cards have for doing like incredibly repetitive math.
Yep.
When the crash of the cryptocurrencies, which will likely happen, comes, you're gonna see a lot of really high-end maybe one generation back video cards hit the market used lightly, very cheap, and I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, if you invest in cryptocurrencies, be very careful because it's gonna wipe out the entire economy. By the way, buy my gold because I'm a talk show host. Have you noticed that about talk show hosts?
Are we saying buy the gold in bananas in banana form?
No, we're not saying buy the gold in banana forms and don't.
They are yellow and golden.
Don't.
Okay.
But like talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity.
Oh, no.
And Tom Hartman all like, you know, they talk about how the economy is going to collapse, so you should buy gold. And it seems like gold companies are basically one of the few things left to the AM talk show. It's really creepy to listen to both left wing and right wing talk show hosts use their whatever ideology they've got to basically get to the same point, which is one, ultimately that you can't trust anything ever. You're going to die. So for fear mongering, for the purposes of an advertiser who sells gold. And that just made like the lie of here I am, I'm a talk radio host, so I'm going to bag on other talk radio hosts.
You should sell silver.
Yeah. No, I want to sell. I'm going to sell an intentionally insecure cryptocurrency, marketing it as the only ecologically sane one. So Xenocoin will use single DES. It'll be eminently copyable. And, and we'll sign it with, we'll sign it with CRC-32 for the fingerprinting mechanism or something like that.
Easy
stuff. Yeah. And the reason we're doing it is because we believe in the climate. Are we done with this?
Right. We do have some feedback
Bitcoin.
Paris.
Yeah. Regarding Bitcoin mining guilds in World of Warcraft, there's a pretty cool examination of this concept in Neal Stephenson's Reamed. I don't know how to pronounce that. If you've not already read it, I have not. Also, it's true that blockchain enthusiasts usually have no idea how cryptocurrencies actually work, hence the term Dunning-Kruger ends, which
is beautiful.
I kind of like that. Yeah, I stopped reading
Neal Stephenson.
Neal Stephenson after the Baroque Cycle. During the Baroque Cycle, it just got a little bit too much for me.
You tossed some Neal Stephenson my way early on in our relationship, and it was really fun because you have some awesome, very consumable but very heady science fiction.
Well, I think everybody should read The Diamond Age. It's just one of those books. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I recommend it to my young readers, even those who don't think they like science fiction, especially girls that think they don't like science fiction. Here's a book. I think you'll like it.
Yeah. I suppose it's good for girls who are into science fiction or who should probably be into science fiction, but it's just I don't know.
It's just a really interesting adaptation of different concepts. So yeah. Diamond Age, Neal Stephenson.
Yeah.
An atheist's favorite science fiction book.
Well, we could do that forever, given the amount of science fiction I read. State Representative Sue Peterson of Sioux Falls proposed House Bill 1102 to make sure the words "under God, the people rule" are included on every rendition of the state seal of South Dakota. The punishment for this would be classified as a Class 1 misdemeanor and would include up to 1 year in jail and or a fine of $2,000. Peterson's bill has bipartisan support, with 86 Republicans and 13 Democrats signed on as co-sponsors of the bill. I guess that qualifies as bipartisan support. That's like 8-1. Peterson is quoted, "I think it's because the women's prison does it for us, and I think they just didn't have the right piece. I am aware that there have been misuses of the seal. There were some people who would cut it in half to take artistic license with it. It's a branding issue, and it, the seal, needs to be honored and respected." I feel like there's a piece missing in this brief.
It's the piece where you cut out on the state seal, "under God, the people rule." And so those people who
rules.
There's people that want to, either take artistic license with it or, amend it for your like uniforms or anything like that, or just basically have any kind of free expression by taking an existing piece of art.
So it's not just within the government that they're supposed to only use, because you can literally, the government can say when the seal is used for government purposes, it must be the complete seal. That's a law you can pass, and that's constitutional because it's about the functioning of the government. Again, when you're working for the government, you're a representative of the government, therefore your individual rights to like speech and stuff like that are constrained.
Right.
But
if you have people that are just out in the public, like a high schooler that's, you know, trying to make their own state seal, if they don't include that, supposedly they could be.
Yeah, that's the open question. Is this? Well, I don't know that that's necessarily the case here. Is this a? Is it just within the confines of the government, or is it any use of the seal whatsoever?
It says, here's the text of the bill, "Any replica, facsimile, or reproduction of the state seal shall be a representation of the full and complete seal and shall include the state motto, 'Under God, the people rule.'"
Okay, well, that's going to fall apart almost immediately.
Oh, yeah.
You would think so.
Yeah. There's no way that's going to work. One, the seal is if it's the seal of the state, it's government property, and therefore, in certain ways, you know,
it's communal people property.
It's communal people property. I mean, there are places where you can't use it in cases of like fraud and stuff like that. But yeah, it seems very strange to me that they would pass this.
It's because they don't want people taking out the God parts, right?
That's how it comes to me. I mean, she is saying this mainly because of that state seal where it says God. She wants to have God in there.
Well, is she quoted specifically saying that? This is part of what, yeah, I mean by, I think, this brief.
She's the sponsor of the bill, and the bill says, okay, "and complete seal, and shall include the state motto, 'Under God, the people rule.'"
But is she openly... is she openly saying this, that she's doing this because that phrase is important to her, or is it that she just wants the complete seal? I mean, what I'm basically asking is she being sly about this, or is she being open about it?
She's being open, ridiculous. It's to because there it's because there are satirists who were, you know, making fun of it and having things like, you know, saying there was a podcast in South Dakota that had the state seal. They took off the motto of "Under God, the people rule," and instead put Pikachu saying, "Give us your urine or else." And that she was so offended by that, that they said any modification of the state seal, including the state motto, is punishable.
That's not going to work. This is clear. Is this grandstanding, or does she think this is going to work?
Oh, she thinks it'll definitely pass. It'll be challenged.
Well, no, it's gonna. The law is going to pass. She's got 86 Republicans in South Dakota.
And that's 13 Democrats in South Dakota.
Okay, and
as well.
All 13. So it's going to pass. Whatever. Yeah. But just because a bill passes doesn't mean it's going to work. I mean, this will fall down on the first court challenge.
Of course, but
you're going to have the ACLU right there,
and they are already.
Is there acknowledgement that this bill is openly unconstitutional or anything like that?
Well, the ACLU is saying we'll get involved if this is going on.
If they did.
Right. And really, this podcast, it seems really silly to say give us a urine or else. He was using this and altering the state seal to protest state police officers doing forced catheterization.
Yeah.
And so it's all in protest. And it's someone that doesn't enjoy protest of the police and the removal of God from her state seal.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to the break. And when we come back, it would normally be a best words segment, but frankly, it is about the show. So it's really just Ask an Atheist doing its job. See you then.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And in the very short break, Becky had a creepy realization, and I cannot believe we're talking about this on the show, but it's weird. The Tide Pod Challenge.
I'll bring it back to skepticism a little bit, and that's okay. Think critically about what you're doing, children or young adults. So this Tide Pod Challenge, which is a terrible idea and is advised against in all senses of the word, and I cannot more strongly say don't eat chemicals from your washing machine. I think that it speaks to an innate urge that some people have to bite into something and have gel squirt out of it. And I came to this realization that the young people that are engaging in this ridiculous Tide Pod Challenge have spent their childhood without Gushers fruit snacks being marketed to them, because that was early 90s, or Freshen Up chewing gum being marketed to them, because that was mid to late 80s. You remember the Freshen Up chewing gum?
Yeah.
They're like
little
squares, and then
all of these
bite
things
into
are
it.
Still available.
But they're not being heavily marketed, and instead we have these Tide Pods, and I think that these companies are really falling
they're missing a trick to advertise again.
They are. I mean, seriously, if you're having people that are already biting into these things, make it comestible instead of chemical.
So you're suggesting that as a response to
Tide Pod Challenge,
as response to adolescents eating incredibly concentrated detergents that might like dissolve their insides, you make something that looks like a Tide Pod but is actually food,
like Gushers or Freshen Up gum,
or to take it back
that
to the
children may eat and then get hungry. And then search through their house looking for these things, like mining for candy.
Okay. Perhaps I didn't think this through so well. I hadn't gotten there yet.
You take it to like the old retro candy stores where they have like the little mini bottles of Coke or whatever,
yeah.
The little wax candies that are filled with gels and
stuff.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I do know that last night you guys were trying to figure out how to make Jello shots that look like Tide Pods.
Yes.
I remember that.
We could do this easily. We have the technology.
Yeah, you were totally on it. And at least with an alcoholic beverage, you're not necessarily going to have kids
we're just talking about alcoholic Jell-O jigglers. It's fine.
And not quite the same level of burn. Still a burn.
Oh. In his proclamation of National Religious Freedom Day, the President of the United States declared that no American, whether a nun, nurse, baker, or business owner, should be forced to choose between the tenets of faith or adherence to the law. The declaration also promised that the U.S. will continue to condemn and combat extremism, terrorism, and violence against people of faith. A day later, the Department of Health and Human Services announced its intentions to create a division within the Office of Civil Rights to more vigorously and effectively enforce existing laws protecting the rights of conscience and religious freedom. Many believe this push will allow healthcare workers and entire hospitals to opt out of or offering care or performing procedures that represent standard practice but conflict with moral or religious beliefs. Issues include reproductive and abortive care, treatment of transgender patients, and hospice care. And not Viagra, oddly enough.
That doesn't seem to be on the table. No one morally objects to that, I guess, that, you know, that's at least for their religion, or at least one that will be defended by Trump or his administration or Health and Human Services.
Yeah.
No, really, the main fear here is that you'll have people that will be denied care because someone said your lifestyle conflicts with my religious belief, and so I don't have to treat
you. You know, it's I personally, it's the individual thing, like the individual person working at a pharmacy or whatever never bothered me too much, in as much as it sets up a trend for entire institutions to turn patients away, which I think is inimical to the very idea of how the American healthcare system is supposed to work. The idea is that it's privatized, it's private, and people make money off of it, and that's what makes it available to everybody. But now we're specifically saying that if you are of a certain population, if you're not in the majority of the United States, you are not going to get that care. And then this very concept of universal private health care is destroyed by this, especially when you have the Department of Health and Human Services specifically saying that they're going to start enforcing laws, whatever laws happen to exist. I don't think the legal code is on their side here, necessarily. To make it that, you know, everybody can be Hobby Lobby no matter what moral position they've got. I also find it very interesting that, you know, no American, whether a nun, nurse, baker, or business owner, should be forced to choose between the tenets of faith or adherence to the law. That's a fairly broad statement. Like, he's basically, in his rhetoric, saying that religious people can do anything they want.
But in the next sentence, he goes on to say that continue to condemn and combat extremist terrorism and violence against people of faith.
Right.
So he's saying that Christians over here, they can follow whatever laws they want to, but these Muslims or other religious people over
here. It's a very specific message to a very specific
white crowd.
Population of people who go to CPAC, who are all traditionally evangelical, white, Christian Republicans. This is playing to what base he has. And you'll also notice in this dialogue that atheists, people without faith, are nowhere in this conversation. They are specifically ignored by the rhetoric, in not only just from the President of the United States, but from the Director of Health and Human Services.
I mean, do you remember, like, so long ago, he said there were good people on both sides. On both sides.
Oh,
and this
to be honestly, yeah, that's never far from my mind. I just, how do you link it to this?
That he's talking about two disparate groups of people, both religious, that in this case, he completely loves one and just doesn't care about anything else about
yeah,
this other group over
and
here.
So much of this is just political football, and the way I point that out is through the Viagra thing. Nobody seems to have a problem with erectile dysfunction drugs, where you know, abortion is bad, contraception is bad, but the drugs that are fueling congressional bad behavior are allowed, are morally okay, because one of these things is a political football, and one of them is not.
One of the things that's really offensive to me as an atheist and as a freethinker is Trump utilizing the, you know, the writing of Thomas Jefferson. It's the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom. It's one of the only things that Thomas Jefferson said, I want this on my epitaph. I want this as an epitaph on my tombstone, because he was very proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the precursor for our religious freedom clause in our federal constitution. But there is so much of the original statute that enshrines the civil rights for someone to have no religious convictions or religious convictions that conflict with the majority in order to hold office.
Right.
Not in order to decide whether someone should be able to fill their prescriptions or whether they should be able to get their tubes tied. I mean, if you have someone that goes to a hospital or they are restricted to only one provider because they have private insurance and they get assigned to this particular provider who says, no, I'm sorry, it's against my religious conviction that women should be sterilized because they should have as many babies and be fruitful and multiply. That is completely conflicting with the spirit of Thomas Jefferson's, you know, religious freedom statute of Virginia from, you know, 200 years ago.
Right.
And or 300 years ago, nearly. Well, OK, 250 years ago, because and so the gall that he has to use that. Now, I know that it's been that way since I believe Bush in the 90s, in the early 90s, declared religious freedom and made it on the anniversary of the signing of the Virginia Statute. But when you look at it, yes, it does give very specific rights to people to practice their religions. It also protects people from having those religions force tyranny upon those that are just seeking their pursuit of happiness.
In the ethics classes that we were supposed to be getting in the United States, they would often talk a lot about, you know, how these rights that we are that. Are enumerated in the Constitution, but are not necessarily given to us by the Constitution, do come with responsibilities. You know, and that goes to the quintessential fire in a crowded theater, but it also goes to stuff that's very, very cogent today, where just because you have the right to say something doesn't free you of those consequences. And that's something that a lot of people everywhere seem to be forgetting, especially online. You know, is when you speak, you have to own up. You're taking responsibility for those words because those words are now yours. Where this is just another example of that is apparently we are supposed to have the freedoms of religion without the responsibilities of getting along in a pluralistic environment that the United States was literally designed to be by the people who designed how it was going to work. And that's. And it's disgusting, but I would expect no less, and this is where I get my most political, of a party that, on one hand, allows rhetoric like there are good people on both sides during the Charlottesville fiasco, calling itself the party of Lincoln. This is...
That is painful.
It's incredibly painful. I'm not saying that... I'm specifically not saying that... I'm saying the opposite, that everybody who's a Republican is a bigot. I don't believe that, not for a second. But if you're going to call yourself the party of Lincoln and you're going to make a big deal about that, you're going to have to conflate these two things. You have to connect them. You're going to have to resolve them in your mind. Instead, we just live in this reality distortion field where they can hold these. You know, there's a word for that is escaping me. Cognitive dissonance. There's a cognitive dissonance going on there. And as this is just another example of that, and just shows the extreme level of practice and competence that American politics has. They are incredibly competent at cognitive dissonance. We're the best. We're the best people in the world at cognitive dissonance. Nobody does cognitive dissonance better than the politicians of the United States.
One of the things that's very dissonant for me here is you have the Department of Health and Human Services that is more concerned with Christian supremacy than it is with actual health of humans.
Yeah.
And to me, that is just incredibly worrying and demoralizing.
Senate Majority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell dared Democrats on Twitter to choose between letting children lose health coverage through the federal government known as CHIP and the residency status of young immigrants brought to the country as children, also known as Dreamers. McConnell called the choice a no-brainer, writing that health care funding vote should be easy, except the Democratic leader has convinced Senate Democrats to filibuster any funding bill that doesn't include legislation they are demanding for people who came to the United States illegally. But we are talking about children here, children who may not, and in some cases had decided to come here, but in very dire straits, but often had no choice whether or not they were to come here or not. Their family was coming here and they had to come with. How does this guy, this is another example of that. He's basically attacking children with this. And this guy, I'm sure, sleeps like a baby at night.
A very rich baby.
Well, yes. Yeah, of course.
The comparison that he's saying is, hey, Democrats, it should be a no-brainer. Either your, you know, 6.9 million American kids or your several hundred thousand illegal children, right? Mm-hmm. And but he doesn't even say children. He just makes that divide in his own rhetoric. And I think that the American people can
because
see through that.
If he called them children, he would have to own it himself.
Exactly.
So
but
can't.
it should be obvious to, right. to all of us who are thinking and feeling and have any sense of compassion or humanism that we are talking about kids on both of these issues. And to say, oh, it's Democrats' fault for not choosing one child's safety over another child's safety is really disgusting.
Well, it's also a point that completely destroys the idea that McConnell wants to get rid of both. He's using this is not an honest dichotomy that he's offering.
Oh, no. He wants to get rid of both.
Right.
Well, if something doesn't personally help him, he is not really in favor of it, and he is definitely
well, that's,
not.
That's
immigrant.
True of most humans, is it not?
In general, but yes, there's something that you know in a shutdown, which
1 minute,
which this is. The military is something that's kind of been left out of this discussion also.
Right.
Is that generally when you have a shutdown, military still gets paid. Currently, they are not going to be. However, Claire McCaskill does actually have a bill that's trying to actually get them their paychecks as well.
Oh, yeah. And guess who objected immediately?
Republicans.
Yeah,
right.
McConnell himself said, no, we don't want to pay the active duty military either. So he doesn't want to pay active duty service members. He doesn't want to pay for kids who immigrated from dire circumstances. He doesn't want to pay for kids continue.
Military. I don't want to say this is a necessarily conservative trait, but specifically in the case of McConnell, is there literally any population of people he won't use as a political bargaining chip? He seems especially. There's just so much about this that's really heartless.
This man, he needs his heart. He needs a heart. Somebody.
Yeah, something tells me there's going to be no Grinch thing going on here. Anyway, this is Ask an Atheist. Our voicemail is 844-753-7842. Our email is questions@atheist.radio. Our website is atheist.radio. See you guys next week. Holy cats, I'm tired.